Thanks for all of you who came in.
Thank you.
Item 1245, please.
Authorized conveyance of city-owned property located at 1010 to 1034 Northeast Grand Avenue to Home Forward and funding not to exceed $5,600,000 to its affiliate, Lloyd Housing Limited Partnership, for the construction of a new mixed-use affordable housing development located in the Oregon Convention Center urban renewal area.
Colleagues, this development with our regional partners at the Portland Housing Bureau, Home Forward, Multnomah County, and my office exemplifies a great regional working partnership to accomplish a common goal, which is to increase affordable housing in our community. This project, a 12-floor mixed-use building, will consist of ground floor, commercial, and retail space, and 240 multifamily residential units. Additionally, in solidifying our ongoing commitment to creating deeply affordable units, this project will include 20 units serving households at or below 30% median family income. It's my understanding that this property will become the largest affordable housing development built in Portland in the last 50 years. In a time when we see so much divisiveness in government across the country, personally, I find it very reassuring that we have local agencies that are working together seamlessly to address our community's needs around housing. These strong relationships help us to do big things for people we serve, and this building is a testament on how we're responding to our housing crisis. Home Forward is not a typical housing authority, and I'm very happy that we have a partner with the knowledge, the skills, and the capacity to deliver landmark properties at this scale to our community. To give us some further details on this development opportunity, we have the Portland Housing Bureau's director, Kurt Krieger, here, as well as Home Forward's director, Michael Bontor. Come on up, gentlemen.
Mayor, can I have a brief opening comment?
Commissioner Fish.
While our distinguished guests are coming forward, we have two members of council that were not here in 2010 when this property was transferred to the city, and there's an important history lesson here that I want to put on the table, because we would not be having this hearing today had an event not occurred. In 2010, as part of the creation of the new Portland Housing Bureau, which in fairness was a core priority of the then mayor, Sam Adams, and was charged to the then housing commissioner, me, to effect, there was a debate about what to do with all the properties that were in the inventory of the then Portland Development Commission and whether they should be assigned to the city or be retained by PDC. This particular piece of property, because of its location, generated a lot of interest. And just to sort of explain the different cultures that were at work back then, when PDC looked at this property through the lens of economic development, not through the lens of housing, what they saw was a luxury hotel or luxury apartments or possibly retail space, but it was high end. And in fact, the property came to the city with a unfulfilled development agreement of some kind with Joe Weston. And Mr. Weston had gone through different iterations, but his at then most recent vision for the site was a high-end hotel, a luxury hotel for that site. When it came over to the city, it was covered by the strategic plan and the values that the council adopted when the creation of the Portland Housing Bureau occurred, and the city adopted a set of principles about how money would be spent. There was nothing in those principles which said that it was a concern of the Portland Housing Bureau to create a hotel or high-end luxury housing. In fact, it was specifically focused on people shut out from the marketplace. And so I won't go into the details, but there was some conflict over that, and there was a little bit of vinegar. But here's the bottom line. Because the council ultimately decided that all those properties that were in play be transferred to the city, and because the city established clear guidelines for how that money should be spent, we are here today celebrating, as the mayor said, a substantial down payment on affordable housing in our community rather than completing a DDA on a luxury hotel. And that has everything to do with the creation of the new Portland Housing Bureau. And the final thing I will say, colleagues, is it also explains, while as long as I'm on this council, I will never accept backsliding on what we did in 2009, 2010 in creating the new bureau. I welcome a partnership between Prosper Portland and the Housing Bureau. I welcome the strategic partnerships with others. But what this teaches us is when the dollars came to the Housing Bureau, they became a matter of concern for low-income households in our city, not economic development, not high-end hotels, not other things which we can debate the merits of, but are no longer eligible for funding through this process. So I just want to acknowledge Margaret Van Vliet. I want to acknowledge Patrick Quinton. I want to acknowledge Mayor Adams, who was a champion for creating the new bureau. I want to acknowledge the then PDC chair, Scott Andrews. I had a small role, but it was a collective effort, and it was the council that put the marker down and said, these dollars and these properties will be spent and focused on the needs of people shut out from the market. And we would not be here today had that property not gone from PDC to the city.
Great. Thank you, Commissioner. That's actually very helpful and I think an important introduction.
Absolutely.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor Wheeler, members of council. My name is Kurt Krieger. I'm director of Portland's Housing Bureau, and it's my pleasure today to describe the financial contours of this project and Michael Buonocore as the owner and managing general partner of the partnership, which is doing the development, will describe how they will operate this for the next 99 years. We've got a PowerPoint presentation with hard copies to follow so that you can have backup documents as you desire. as mentioned, this is a key site within the the Convention Center, Oregon Convention Center, Urban Renewal Area, and this map shows you the coordinates fronting on Grand, Hassalo, and Holiday. This is a flagship site for the Portland Housing Bureau, and as so accurately described by Commissioner Fish, it has multiple competing interests and uses. But since the Housing Bureau came into possession of this site, the streetcar was installed. It became a much more walkable neighborhood. And we saw with great interest what was going on with the adjacent Lloyd Eco District, which contains really no affordable housing whatsoever. So we felt it was important to help counterbalance that market rate development with a strong infusion of equity and equitable housing. It's within a half a block of the Convention Center Hotel. It will be a dynamic, walkable urban environment for many years to come. When this partnership was crafted, it was really under the leadership of Commissioner Saltzman in 2015. Immediately after the state of emergency was declared with housing and homelessness, the Housing Bureau moved every one of its sites and all of its available money forward in what we call a super NOFA, a Notice of Funding Availability. We were all in to help you solve the housing crisis, and our partners responded. Home Forward was one of two competitors for this site. REACH CDC was also in competition, a very capable developer. But they had differences in their approach, which I will describe in a little bit. So in early 2016, Commissioner Saltzman selected Home Forward. And this project is important to note that it is jointly underwritten by Multnomah County. For the first time, we braided our funding streams together in the Super NOFA, offered, in this case, Oregon Convention Center Urban Renewal Funds of $5.1 million and $500,000 of resources from Multnomah County. So it was an unprecedented level of cooperation where they gave us essentially control over their money, and we originated and vetted projects with their involvement. So we're both very excited about this. So your action today will essentially approve $5.1 million in funding for the project. The total development cost is $74 million. The result would be a 12-story mixed-use building. It's important to note that when the site was conveyed by Prosper, then PDC, to the Housing Bureau, it had a book value acquired in the year 2000 of about $1.4 million. And of course, in the present day, it's worth more. It's worth over $3 million at present. But on the city's books, this is reflected at about a $1.25 million basis. The 240 affordable units, in this case, 100% below 60% of AMI using the 4% tax credit program, which we can discuss in a little bit more detail, and 20 deeply affordable units at or below 30% of area median income with resident services, which Michael will describe. It's also important that you know that this is one of the projects that where we have gone from long-term affordability to permanent affordability. Title 30, which is your policy dictates to the Housing Bureau, says that housing should be affordable for a minimum of 60 years. And because of our strong commitment, and in this case, ownership of the land, conveyance of that land at no cost to Home Forward, we have been asking our partners to agree to 99 years of affordability. So this will do that. And so you have more public value, longer-term commitments from our partners as a result. This was in part selected because of its dynamic streetscape. REACH had a very good design, also had 240 units proposed, but they were going to have a nonprofit partner anchor the ground floor. In this instance, Home Forward is curating the retail space for sale to a retail operator, a private retail operator. So we think in the long term, having a dynamic streetscape with lots of pedestrian activity will help enliven the neighborhood and bridge the neighborhood between the Oregon Convention Center itself and the Lloyd Eco District.
Why are we selling it rather than renting it out?
That's a question for Michael. They are taking the financial risk on that space, and they are actually paying out of pocket for the tenant improvements. So they have some risk rewards to balance here in their transaction. I think it's in their best financial interest to sell it.
Oh, wait. Never mind. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. It is important that you know, however, that was a key factor in the decision, which is how this relates to the street, how it enhances the neighborhood and builds on success. We have established a minimum standard of 35% women, minority, disadvantaged small business in terms of the hard costs. And as I mentioned, the total project cost is some $74 million. So this will have a significant impact on minority and women-owned businesses. And they have committed to LEED Gold. I would note that this project, as I mentioned, is a financed with bonds and low-income housing tax credits. And Dirk Vanderhart's been tracking the impact on tax credits with tax reform, so it's probably worth mentioning that Home Forward's price from Bank of America for the tax credits is $1.07. The average in 2017 is 95 cents. So Home Forward is receiving a price premium of 12 cents over and above the national average. And I think it's worth mentioning that that's worth about $2 million. And it's in large part because of the stability and quality management of Home Forward and the unitary underwriting that Bank of America has applied to this, both in the debt and equity, because they are providing the entire suite of financial services, which reduces some cost. And
what's the value of the tax credit again?
The total value, it's a $29 million tax credit infusion. $29 million of tax credits.
But they're getting the benefit of what, 90-something cents on the dollar? Or what?
They're getting the benefit of $1.07.
So just to put that in context, in the teeth of the recession where we couldn't get the development moved in South Waterfront, when the market collapsed, I think it was down to like 70-something cents on the dollar, so it was just not feasible. So that's an extraordinary turnaround and a reflection of the high of the balance sheet of Home Forward.
Yeah. So I wanted to reinforce that because the complexity can be somewhat mind-boggling at times, but this really reflects a stellar project in a stellar location undertaken by a stellar developer with a great team. And I think you can be proud of this for many years to come. The next slide describes the total development costs, talks a little bit about the city's leverage. Our investment is leveraging 10 outside dollars in the form of tax credits and tax-exempt bonds. And Home Forward is all in with $12 million of their own resources plus an allocation of project-based rental assistance vouchers.
Kurt, I feel like you just buried the lead, and I want to reiterate that. it leverages our resources 10 to 1 with outside and private resources. Because I know there's a lot of back on the of the envelope scribbling going on now as a result of the total cost that you mentioned in exchange for permanent affordability. So I want to keep that front and center, 10 to 1 leverage. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you for pointing that out. The actions before you today, then, in Ordinance 1245, would be to authorize me to execute the final disposition and development agreement and other documents to implement the project undertaken by a company created for this purpose, Lloyd Housing Limited Partnership. We would be also conveying $5.1 million of Oregon Convention Center Urban Renewal Tax Increment Financing and $500,000 of money from Multnomah County's Home for Everyone Fund. And I would then be authorized to enter into any final agreements necessary to implement the project in substantially the form presented to you today. Before Michael speaks, I'd like to recognize that this is a team effort, involves a lot of people, and as alluded to by Commissioner Fish, it involved people that are not here today. But the people that are here today that were instrumental, Jill Chen, project manager within the Housing Bureau, Carl Dinkelspiel, housing finance manager, and Javier Mina, assistant director. I'd like to recognize Lisa Gramp with the Office of the City Attorney. These are very complicated projects, and the City Attorney's involvement is instrumental to our success. It's worth mentioning that this project is not technically does not fall underneath the City of Portland's inclusionary housing requirements. It's a fine point detail, since it's 100% affordable anyway. But it's important that you know that it was vested prior to. So that summarizes my comments, and Michael Bonacore is here with his project manager and director, Jonathan Trutt.
Thanks, Kurt. Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor Wheeler, Commissioners. Thank you for having me. We are thrilled to be here and very excited about this project. I remember learning that we were awarded this project. We had just completed one of the largest preservation efforts in the state's history on four of our public housing high-rise buildings on over 600 apartments, and we were giving Commissioner Saltzman a tour, my board chair and I, when he congratulated us on being the winner in the competition and asked if we felt like we had the capacity to take on a big project like this. And we were thrilled and said that we absolutely did. And in fact, this is very much in the wheelhouse of what we do well, large and complex projects. So we couldn't be more excited to be doing this. Our original proposal, which was awarded, actually had a lower unit count and a lower number of affordable apartments. But today we are at 240 at 100% affordability at 60% and below. And as the mayor said, with 20 project-based vouchers providing deep affordability, as well as three more apartments at 50% affordability. So to be able to significantly increase the number of affordable apartments and not have to come back to the city for any more money feels like a big victory for all of us and something we're really excited to get in the dirt and start to deliver. And as much as we love doing big projects like this, our role is not just as a competitor for city resources, but as a strategic and funding partner with all of you in the larger effort to increase affordable housing in the community. And we're very careful on both sides to sort of wall off those two roles. But frankly, the more important is that we are a partner in this effort. And I think that role, is critical to leverage the resources and expertise that exist between our organizations. And, it's been acknowledged, but I think it's really important to acknowledge again just what a big lift the Portland Housing Bureau did to put all of those resources out on the street en masse like they did in response to this crisis. And if I could do anything to change the reality that we were in the crisis that we're in, I would. And it's important that while we take every opportunity to figure out how we use our resources together strategically, and that we leverage our talents and capacities. And so I believe this project does, and I think our relationship in the much larger sense does that. In this SuperNOFA, we contributed 100 project-based vouchers to try to get as much deep affordability in all of the projects, whether they were ours or not. And the value of those vouchers over the 15-year contract period that they will be committed to provides millions more in resources to contribute towards the effort that we're all making together. So, you know, truly, we could not be more proud to be your partner and to be working collaboratively, but we are here today mostly to say thank you for your trust in us to deliver on this project. So thank you very much, and as you have questions, Jonathan has joined me to be able to answer some of those as well. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
I have a few.
Commissioner Fish.
I love the idea that the commercial space will be professionally managed, and you're looking to sort of think about it in the context of the fact you've got a hotel across the street, a convention center, and the Lloyd District. But there's a cautionary tale I want to avoid, which is what we experienced at the Clifford Apartments. The Clifford Apartments, as you know, has a lot of very vulnerable people in it. And the primary anchor tenant of that building was a package store. Mm-hmm. And as a result, we were in the anomalous situation of a nonprofit housing developer providing housing to people in recovery and then on the ground floor selling alcohol. But it was a package store selling mm-hmm. the high-octane malt liquor and other things. So do we need an amendment, or can I have your assurance that there'll be no package store on the ground floor of this building?
Jonathan, Jonathan Trett, Director of Development for Homeford. I don't believe we need an amendment because it's going to be in all the condo documents that that's a prohibited use. So there will be no alcohol store, no package store in that building.
Thank you. And it's weird that that there were some legacy projects throughout the city where he found this situation. But as you know, 6th and Morrison became quite a scene because people living in the building were essentially getting their daily fix of very unhealthy things and then hanging out. And it just seems to me nonprofits should not be in the business of enabling that. So I'm very pleased to hear that.
May I just interrupt? Can it have a pub? Is that?
I don't think we've precluded the possibility of a pub.
Yes or no? Yes. So a restaurant, a food, is a permissible use within the commercial space.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with a restaurant. I do have a problem with a package store selling turbocharged alcohol that's cheap. The second thing is, I forget what standard applies here. So this is being built to what LEED specification?
It is going to be LEED for Homes Gold.
LEED Gold.
Yes.
And that's our standard, right? It has to be LEED Gold or above for anything the city invests in?
I believe so.
Yeah. Well, just to clarify, the city, in October, you adopted a standard, which is a Portland Housing Bureau sustainability standard.
Right.
It's not, strictly speaking, LEED Gold, but it focuses on indoor air quality, energy savings, and water savings in a way that actually achieves.
No, I get it.
Goals.
And there's a big debate about whether
this will be certified.
LEED is the right. Yeah. Does this meet our minimum standards in sustainability?
Absolutely. Exceeds it.
And then here's the other thing. We as our friends at Home Forward know, because they were instrumental in this, we made a commitment as a council a couple months ago to add 200 units of permanent supportive housing every year. So I'll be looking to each project that we fund for what's the set-aside towards that goal. The 20 project-based Section 8 vouchers will bring, obviously, allow us to bring the rents down. Is it our intent for those to be permanent supportive housing units? So I can't support this unless we actually make a down payment in this project. So what would it take? Is it the answer no, because we have to put some service dollars in there, or you don't have the capacity, or both?
Well, it hasn't been designed with supportive housing in mind. It would need, I think, a significant services investment above what's budgeted for the property.
So in fairness, the county and the city have said we have to come up with the service dollars. So the question now becomes, what additional steps do we have to take so that those units could be eligible for people that need permanent supportive housing? And it's a 217 units, so we're talking about 20 out of 217. So I would not think it's not a huge impact overall. So we have a policy saying we're going to hit 200 and we're going to start looking opportunistically at every project. So this is 5.1 million. What could we do in the early stages of this project to ensure there are some PSHs? And what would you need from us?
Well, what I can tell you today is that we are explicitly providing a preference and working with the domestic violence system to house people with these units. So there is a deep services component for a population who will be housed here. It's not just necessarily generic, deeply affordable housing. And that's the programming that we have moved forward with.
Under what policy? Because we're picking. I mean, there's dozens of populations that require our. So what's the policy that put domestic violence survivors ahead of, say, formerly homeless people with mental illness or whatever?
Sure, we have been working for several years now to deepen our very active partnership with the DV system, and we continue to see significant need there. You know, as we develop projects, each one is a consideration about location and what partners might be available to work with us. And again, we continue to see this as a significant service need.
So I completely support providing housing for victims of domestic violence, but this is the first project out of the box, and we're already experiencing the problem which I anticipated, which is We are going to lose an opportunity because of some other compelling use. We're not enforcing a policy, and we got 217 units, and not one of them, Kurt, is eligible, is set aside for permanent supportive housing. So what are we doing wrong?
Well, I think I would frame it differently.
Sure you would, but what the question? Yeah. I want to get to the outcome, yeah. Not the framing.
Right.
How do we get to the outcome?
So Multnomah County underwrote this project with the Housing Bureau, and from the very inception, survivors of domestic violence was part of the program, and they were selected on that basis. And I would say that Multnomah County's underwriting was strongly influenced by that connectivity, the linkage that the Housing Authority had agreed to undertake with their domestic violence program. So the units will exist for 99 years, and they can be infused with service dollars as they become available through the county funding streams. And that relationship exists. The units are going to be there. I'm not actually of the belief that we're missing an opportunity. I think we actually have a good confluence of interests that is coming at the right time. When the county has the money, the Housing Authority will have the units. And frankly, it's going to take a couple of years to build. This is going to be a late 2019 project. So as your policy directive to me and Mark Jolin plays out, the funding strategy will be in place before the units are completed.
My last comment.
Commissioner, could I just join this conversation? Because
yeah.
It's within walking distance of the Unity Center. Mm-hmm. And this project has a resident manager, is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, so it would seem that that's got services very close at hand, and one of the reasons for the Unity Center is to have that emergency room where people can get their medications adjusted and go back out into the community. It's not intended to have everybody going into long-term care. So that might be one way to start addressing your concern, which I share.
Well, and I wasn't born yesterday. I understand the opportunistic funding sources. I understand capitalizing on an opportunity that arises because there's some funding available. This is not a criticism. What I'm simply pointing out is that the city has committed to add 200 units of permanent supportive housing to address two-thirds of the people who are homeless. This is the first project of its kind that's come to us, and there is not a single unit of PSH identified consistent with the policy the city said would guide our investments going forward. So we've got to figure out a way, Mayor, to make this intentional and institutional, because we're not going to get there if every project has a laudable other goal. And it could be many things. The next one could be veterans homelessness. The next project could be family-friendly housing. And they're all important. If I could be king for a day, I'd house everybody. But we now have a policy saying we're going to get hit 200 a year, and we're going to miss an opportunity in this project to get one. And what I want to make sure is that people are clear when we're doing our underwriting that this is not discretionary, that we're going to build these in. Because if not, we're going to be at the back of the line. I know that because I've watched over the years PSH go to the back of the line. And the reason we brought a resolution to council was to have the council say, this goes to the front of the line. So we're going to change. And I'm satisfied that if the county money is taking victims of domestic violence who are at most risk when they're on the streets, we know that, women at most risk, and that this is sort of a kind of a PSA. This is a first cousin. But this is not what the council has directed has to be set aside going forward. And I can't support another project beyond this one, Mayor, where we don't have someone present to us how we're going to capitalize on a permanent supportive housing unit within this.
So let me respond to that, because I think you've clearly articulated a need, and I agree with it, and that's why I voted for the resolution around permanent supportive housing. The permanent supportive housing strategy is being ironed out as we speak per the resolution we all supported with inclusion from the Portland Housing Bureau. So I've heard nothing that suggests that this project cannot be included under the strategy being developed around permanent supportive housing. Is there anything here that prohibits us once we have that strategy ironed out from this project being part of it? Yeah. I don't hear that.
This will be ready.
Well, I
think we're in agreement. Mm-hmm.
In fairness, the developer has said there's a different programming purpose that they're going to follow with their project-based Section 8s, and they should be applauded for putting project-based Section 8s. Those are the gold standards, and they get pulled and pushed for all those things. So to put project-based Section 8 vouchers in this building is remarkable. But they don't have the dollars to provide the services, and we're not designing the building, Mayor, with the idea that the services are blended in on some floor for a particular population. And so we are actually missing an opportunity. And I will also say, the directive to come up with a strategy was not intended to delay a year meeting our goals. We said in year one we would opportunistically meet the goals. The idea of a strategy is to have a clear sense of how we meet the 10-year goal. But it did not prevent us from saying on each and every project we're going to ask to have some contribution. In fact, it was my explicit statement at the time that we were going to do both.
Well, as the director has said, this project, we're not going to be going to any groundbreaking this year or next year, and it'll probably be in 2019. We don't have the source of funding. Excuse me, please do not interrupt. Let me finish what I'm saying. We do not have the strategy completed yet. We do not have the source of funding identified. And I'm not hearing anything in this testimony that leads me to believe this therefore closes the door on permanent supportive housing in this project. I'm not hearing that. If I'm wrong, tell me I'm wrong.
You're spot on, sir.
Commissioner Udaly.
Mayor.
Commissioner Udaly.
Obviously, I share Commissioner Fish's concern and dedication to permanently supportive housing, but I do want to speak to kind of the unique need and vulnerability of domestic violence survivors when it comes to housing. Because we have no cause evictions, visit from the police to a rental unit, a DV visit, often results in a no cause eviction. I spoke recently to a nonprofit that supports a small number of community members in housing, both finding their housing, working with them to remain in the housing, and giving rental support. There was one individual in a complex with six residents supported by this organization who was the victim of domestic violence. The property management company tried to illegally evict this person and failed because she had this organization to advocate. So instead, they have chosen not to renew the 6 leases for all the residents in that building. So we also have an issue of gridlock with our DV support system, with people coming into facilities and not having anywhere to be placed for permanent housing. So I just want to say I agree. I would love to see a commitment to a minimum number of PSH units, but that this is certainly a laudable endeavor to support DV survivors. So I've had a couple questions. I know the first, well, I think, you know, it's a wonderful project. Yay, we're getting 240 deeply affordable units for 99 years. But I think the number one question is going to be the price tag. And if anyone can speak to why that per unit dollar amount appears to be so much higher than, for instance, what, you know, we're estimating on developments with our housing bond money. And I understand we've got the units, we've got $3 million for retail, but it sounds like there will be space that's non-residential and non-retail, but it's not, the equation isn't as simple as $74 million divided by 240. Can anyone speak to that? Like, what's the real per unit cost?
Jonathan?
I can start taking a shot at it. If you take 240 units or divide 74 million by 240, there's a couple things that come to mind. One is, I would say that developments typically have a developer fee in it. And what we have in here is a developer fee consistent with the risk we're taking. And that number is somewhere in the $8 or $9 million range, which is what's allowed by both state and local programs. We're donating that back into the building. So that money is not staying with us. It's going to pay for the building. So that's one piece. You know, what I think about, I mean, I think a lot about this. So I was in the affordable housing world for 12 years and a not-for-profit before I came to Home Forward, and take very seriously the idea that we have to be careful stewards of public dollars. So there are, when you look at the total, a whole bunch of financing costs that are in there. There's architecture costs. And so what I like to do is look at what are we building for? What is the cost per unit in terms of hard costs? That number is closer to $46 million. So if you divide that by 240, what you get down to at either a cost per unit or a cost per square foot is basically consistent with what I hear from private sector developers about what it's costing them to build these days. And that's reflective of this super heated market that we're in. You know, I'd also say in the context of affordable housing, I mean, it is the right question. Why does it cost what it costs? You know, Kurt spoke to 99-year affordability. And there are different incentives that I think, whether it's us as a public agency or a not-for-profit, has when compared to private sector developers when building part of our infrastructure. And what I mean by that is that our incentive is to build something that's going to be durable and last for a really long time. And you focus less exclusively or not exclusively on what does it just cost to get the thing out of the ground, but how do you make sensible investments such that your operating and maintenance costs are manageable over the course of the many decades that get you to permanent affordability. So I could dive deeper into the numbers, happy to do that offline, but that's my sort of off the top of my head answer about that.
And just to, I guess, reinforce Jonathan's point, the Housing Bureau funds are not paying for the retail. Right. That is totally on Home Forward's side of the ledger. If we just look at the hard and soft costs, all in, contingency reserves, all residential costs, it's about $67,621,000, which is $281,754 a unit. In a flagship location on the streetcar, on a site worth some $4 million. And that does not reflect the value of the land. It wouldn't be included in the tax credit basis anyway. So, you know, we think for the next 100 years, that's a good investment. And we're willing to stand by those numbers.
So, Mayor, I want to offer an amendment, if I could. And I'm gonna read it, see if Kurt agrees with it based on the flavor of our conversation, and then see if I have a second. This would be an amendment to the ordinance. It would be a new subsection C to the now, therefore, the council directs, and it would read as follows. Within the next year, the Portland Housing Bureau and Lloyd Housing Limited Partnership shall review the feasibility of including at least 20 units of permanent supportive housing in the development and shall report back to council.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Call the roll.
Udaly?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Operative language is shall review the feasibility, and any feasibility includes additional resources that you believe the city or other partners would have to bring to the table in order to achieve the goals.
Understood. Thank
it's
you.
Not an unfunded mandate. Aye.
Wheeler.
I support this. We're, as I said, already working on the permanent supportive housing strategy with both the county and the joint office. I think it's entirely appropriate to discuss it in the context of a specific project. It'll give us a good operational look at this as well. So I vote aye. The amendment's adopted.
Are you done with your questions?
Any further questions on the main motion, one. Commissioner Fritz, and then we'll go to testimony.
This is a different kind of preference policy. This obviously is in the Convention Center Urban Renewal District. Some of the money came from there. Is there going to be an attempt to prioritize the historically disadvantaged communities in the area as far as who gets the units, like the I forget what it's called in on preference policy?
At the present time, no, Commissioner. The preference policy applies to the Interstate Corridor Urban Renewal Area and not to the Oregon Convention Center Urban Renewal Area. I realize that there are some historic impacts in that neighborhood due to the urban renewal activities. But right now, the city adopted policy for preference applies to the Interstate Corridor, or commonly known as the Albina area.
So I would like you to consider that. To see if there is a way to make reparations for the damage done to the communities who used to live there before the convention center was put in. And we all know that there's far more people who need housing than we have available. So I hope that in whether it's a domestic violence shelter or permanent supportive housing for different reasons, that within that, all of that, there could be a prioritization for folks whose families used to live in the area. Thank you.
Very good. So I don't want to cut this off. If nobody has a burning question, I want to get to public testimony. And again, as I said up front, I'm sorry we're limiting to 2 minutes today because we have a lengthy agenda. We only have about an hour to get through the rest of it. So how many folks do we have signed up? If you could call the first three.
I have one person signed up, Mary Sipe.
Come on up, Mary. Thank you for your patience.
Count on me. Okay, I'll try to be quick with this. Commissioner Fish, I really respect your concern about the permanent supportive housing. I just want to caution you, don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. Don't make this go away because of that focus. The way I see it...
And I'm not married. My
no,
amendment,
and I don't think you
my
are.
My amendment satisfies me for going forward, so I appreciate right. the concern.
Yeah, because I think we need to recognize that these different... categories, I call them, of need have different solutions. And this is a solution for those people who pretty much are either employed or living on Social Security and have limited income. I'm excited to see this because I think there's great need for this. I love where it's located. I like the whole idea. I want to throw out a couple of cautionary things. Director Krieger, I think it's great that we've added 77 more units by making this 100% affordable and not having any market rate. However, a caution to that is it does not allow you to convert a unit into a market rate unit when the tenant's income exceeds the AMI. So you need, when you're establishing your guidelines, you need to address that. And from some of the research I've done, I've learned that you can do that up front when you start establishing things. And also be careful about your requirements for eligibility. I just learned recently that in the building that I live in, we have a very nice two-bedroom unit that's been vacant since July. 5 months, they have not been able to rent that affordable unit because they changed their criteria when Bridge Housing became the major partner and Ed McNamara sold his interest. And now they can't find anybody to qualify for it because of the restrictions that they've put in. You know, one of the things they put in is that anyone who has $1,000 or more in delinquent debt is immediately disqualified. People who need affordable housing often have more than $1,000 in delinquent debt. And to exclude them from eligibility for that reason is unconscionable.
Thank you, Mary. Mm-hmm. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Super Watchdog X. I think the overall project looks really good. The unit number. Again, my opinion on these projects is quality always lasts longer than the overall price. So you got to look at the quality of the property overall on long term. So that's just my opinion. Now, a couple issues I had just again on the land itself. I think that land is quite a bit more valuable than the $5 million mark. You even have in the agreement the title companies put in a $5,600,000 title insurance policy, I believe, on the property itself, so there must be quite a bit higher value there. Now, that's not a big concern to me. Where it comes to the land, from my position, is that I always like to try to recoup the land value back to the city by putting in a due-on-sale clause if this property is ever sold, even try to recoup the money back within 20 years. But I like to try to recoup the money back to the city in some form, and I notice we're not doing that, basing this on the benefits to the public. I have an issue with that. And then again, on the retail space, I understand you're going to do a condo-type commercial sale on it, so my understanding, you would have to do a condo conversion, if I'm incorrect on that. You're not planning on doing a condo conversion on the apartment units themselves also, because you're putting a value of developing that retail space at $3 million. You have an option to sell it back to PHB at about $4.8 million based upon a legitimate appraisal. So, again, you're using the term condominium. So I assume you'll do a condo conversion, and my understanding you have to do that on the whole property itself, not just on the retail you're allowed to do that. Maybe I'm incorrect, and maybe that can be answered by one of the speakers or Commissioner Salzman. Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Wayne Wignes. I was glancing through the document posted, and I noticed there was no standards as to, like, the kind of materials they build with. Now, this is a problem because, you know, culture is inextricable from the habitat that it grows in. There's that part of it, and we're producing a plastic culture. I mean that literally and metaphorically. But on the economic side, consider, you know, the things we build with, material science has transformed it all. The tools we build with, the construction industry has been transformed. What used to take a lot longer and a lot more energy to build, nowadays it pops up a lot quicker. Now that's time and energy that the worker used to benefit from. But nowadays, you know, that's leverage that they lost. Leverage to say how their communities are developed, and leverage to have job security. You know, they used to have 3-4 years worth of work. The developer used to need the worker more. If any of you know about the construction industry, now it's becoming more a matter of who you know, concrete workers got beer bellies, you know. So what I'm saying is the Davis-Bacon Act, premium wage or prevailing wage, it's a red herring from the real issue that, you know, leverage has been lost. And for what? Doing more of the same, it doesn't produce different results. Things are getting worse, not better. You know, economists will tell you that housing has been the leading cause of inequality over the last 50 to 100 years. Producing the options that agencies like Home Forward are providing are increasingly smaller, cheaply made, and yet still overpriced boxes. And that's not going to change things. And the metric that you're using, you used mixed family income. They used area median income. By that standard, correct me if I'm wrong, but a bunch of Californians could come in and we're being judged by 30% of their income. How convenient is that? The very definition of what is affordable keeps going up. And they're just thriving off of this. On one hand, we've created a system where people, you know, it emphasizes help over options. And on one hand, you got people intentionally making themselves helpless. On the other hand, you're creating options that are extreme, and it's not going to change anything.
Thank you. These are good points. Appreciate your testimony. Please call the roll. Kurt, did you want to answer the question about the condominium question? Sorry, I forgot.
Exactly. Thank you very much, Mayor Wheeler, members of council. Kurt Krieger, housing director. This is a two-member condominium, so there will be one commercial member, one residential member. All the residential units will be encompassed into one and retained by the LLP created by Home Forward. The commercial condominium, as as part of the record, is going to be proffered for sale.
Very good. Thank you. Please call the roll.
Fritz. Thanks to everybody who's been involved in this. And Commissioner Fish, thank you for holding everybody's feet to the fire on a very shared value of being supportive to people once they get into this housing. Aye.
Fish.
Me? Oh, I'm sorry. I'm going to support this for a number of reasons. One is Home Forward is a superb development partner, and some of the best development in our city has been done in partnership between the city and Home Forward. Anyone looking at the PowerPoint, I think, is struck by how humane and functional and, frankly, attractive the design is, which is a cornerstone of what Home Forward does. I want to address the question about cost, because it comes up every time, and we should always talk about cost. It is not a peripheral issue. But I just want to, at the risk of beating a dead horse, I just want to reiterate my own personal values. I've sat through lots of discussions in public places where we've talked about building a library, a school, a public plaza, a park. And I've never remembered someone getting up and saying, I object to quality. I object to planning for the long term. I object to putting our values into action. Can't we go cheap? Can't we find some way of making it look crummy? And after all, we could save a buck. Never heard that with all of our public places. But why is it when we build something that houses low-income people, all of a sudden cost becomes the big issue? And we should always look at cost. I happen to think that with the breakthroughs in modular housing, we're going to get our housing down to costs where cost per unit and functionality and beauty and everything hits that sweet spot. But again, we don't usually have people come complain about costs when it's the broader public benefit. And we do pay a little more. And I want to compliment Dan Saltzman when he was housing commissioner for defending three values that the Housing Bureau put forward intentionally. One was we build buildings to last. And what's the point of having a 99-year covenant if it doesn't last? And my friends, a lot of the crap being built in East Portland by private developers has a 15-year shelf life and then has to be rebuilt. So if you're going to build for 99 years, let's make it last. Number two, we build it green. We build it green. It costs a little extra in the front end, but we save a fortune in utility costs in the long run. And what did we hear from the panel? Cleaner air, healthier environment, non-toxic materials. Okay, that's something we can all get behind. And here's the final one. Two, actually. We build to area standards. We do not accept the premise that the people building our building should live in poverty. So it's a prevailing wage project. And that's a big question right now. And there's a big fight about whether we should continue to pay prevailing wage. I think we should proudly pay prevailing wage if it means people can actually go home and feed a family. And here's the final thing, opportunity. We're building this in one of the most desirable new neighborhoods in our city. We're not building this out on the corner of some street, you know, at Gresham and the outer east where there's no infrastructure. We're building it in one of the most attractive places. And we're going to catch hell from that hotel, Mayor, because they put that rooftop restaurant. Now we block their view to the east. But it's a great location. Low-income people should have the right to choose to live in a great location. So it meets all of our values, and that is worth investing in my opinion. Finally, I appreciate that the council adopted the amendment I proposed, and I will make that amendment, Kurt, every time something comes forward. And there is nothing more important than providing housing for victims of domestic violence. We're all in agreement. There's not a debate. But I can assure you, because I've been on the council long enough, unless we keep our feet to the fire and seize an opportunity on each development to find permanent supportive housing units, we'll never meet the goal we've set. And I'm tired of setting goals and then falling short. So we're going to, every project I'm going to ask, how many units and how do we pay for it? But this is a happy day. Dan, congratulations for the Supernova and for shepherding this to this point. Mayor, I enthusiastically support the development team, and I'm pleased to vote aye.
Saltzman?
Well, this is a fantastic project. I laud all the partners involved, the Housing Bureau, Home Forward, and is it Lloyd Development, the private developer as well. This really is a great project. When I took over the Housing Bureau as a commissioner, I think in 2013, and we were working on putting together this Supernova, I recall that this property was slated to just be sold on the open market. So we could have maybe fetched $1-2 million. Instead, now we're looking at a project that's going to provide over 240 units of affordable housing. So I think we made the right decision to hold on to that property, given all its attributes. And as Commissioner Fish said, given it really is, we talk a lot about building affordable housing in important areas, not just on the outskirts of the city, but high opportunity areas, good schools, good transit, good retail, and this Block 45 has it all. And now it's going to be an outstanding home to hundreds of people. So this is a great project. I'm very pleased to support it. Aye.
Hugh Daly.
Sorry, I had to step out. I am now in week 7 of my mystery illness and had to take some medication. So I think my colleagues have probably covered most of the bases. I just want to say this is an exciting and significant step forward in meeting our shortfall of affordable housing, and I'm pleased to vote aye.
Wheeler.
Good work, everybody. Aye. The ordinance is adopted as amended.
Mayor?
Commissioner Fish.
Just as a housekeeping matter, and because we have so much left, our friends at the Portland Utility Board agreed to set over their report to next week. That's 1267. And Carla has found a time certain at 1115. Is that right, Carla?
Yes.
So without objection, Mayor?
Without objection, 1267 moved to next Wednesday at a time certain. Do we have the time certain?
For 1115.
1115 a.m. Thank you. Similarly, item 1259 pertaining to the Central City 2035 plan. I'd like to move item 1259 to 4 p.m. this afternoon to be read along with the other Central City 2035 plan issues. Unless there is any objection, I don't see one. That brings us to item 1260, please.